you know, looked around at prices for multi-gigahertz probes, and obviously the higher frequency you go, the more and more expensive they get.
If we look at, for example, if you, as I mentioned, if you want to measure for high power, like power electronics application, okay? So it could be a off-the-line switch mode power supply where you have high voltage on the primary side and low voltage on the secondary side, and you want to measure the ground difference between the two sides of the transformer, you wouldn't use that FET probe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Altium On Track podcast. I'm your host, Zach Peterson, and today we are happy to have Min Zhang returning to the podcast. He is the founder of Mach 1 Design and, of course, a master of EMC troubleshooting, especially if you have seen him on LinkedIn. Min, thank you so much for being here today with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Zach.
So before we jump in to some of the discussion topics, I just want to note that you are coordinating an event in the UK. It is EMC and Compliance International on May 22nd and 23rd. It will be in Newbury in the UK. So if anyone in the UK is interested in getting some really great hands-on training, highly recommend you attend this event. If you could just give us a quick overview of who's going to be at the event, what folks can learn, that kind of stuff.
Yes, that's correct. Yes. So the show is in less than 3 weeks' time. And this year we had a very good lineup of speakers and trainers. So we hope to see more people to the show.
So one of the things that I think is so great about these kinds of events is that you have a chance to network with people, you have a chance to meet experts directly, and you can probably get that one question that's been nagging at you for a long time answered from someone who's highly knowledgeable on the topic. So highly recommend that people attend this event.
Yeah, that's you're right. Yeah, and particularly in the UK, what we've seen in the past few years was that we got many free to attend trade shows, but often lacking the expertise, as you said. And people really want to learn things and want to speak to their colleagues in the field. And we basically provide this great opportunity for them to mingle in, to learn from each other and to socialize.
Yeah, and I think that socialization part is really important, especially in the past few years, because you know, with COVID and everything canceling so many shows, I've noticed just a huge resurgence in-person shows, and you know, now it seems like there's so many I can't even get to all of them, much as I'd like to.
It's worth mentioning that, you know, the show is called EMC and Compliance. So we have a very strong focus on the EMC and compliance. But my personal vision is in the future, we're going to bring signal and power integrity into the show as well, as we all know how important the subject is. So we fingers crossed, we hope to see you in the future to present and in our show.
I would be happy to do so. Folks that know me know that I occasionally get over to Denmark to talk about this stuff with the good folks at Azatec. Make sure you go check out Azatec if you're listening. So yeah, would be happy to do that, or just to show up to say hello.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You mentioned that, you know, a lot of the times there's just trade shows over there in the UK. To me, you know, trade show versus like an actual venue to get training there's really no comparison, because with trade shows, I feel like everyone's just trying to sell to you.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, we don't mind, right, going to the trade show, but we also would love to go to a conference. So, yeah. So that's why I'm so passionate about helping run this event.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for today's podcast, you're going to discuss something with us that is very relevant for EMC. And I don't know if it's a topic that's going to be presented at the conference, but maybe tell us what you would like to discuss.
You know, I was searching for ground bounce, you know, just as a keyword on Google, okay? And surprise or not surprise, I found many articles that actually is written by you talking about, you know, the design aspect, why do we need separate grounds, whether it's from functional point of view, safety point of view, and how to do a good PCB layout to avoid ground issue. And I really like those articles. So I highly recommend to people listen to this podcast definitely check Zach's articles on these topics. And then I was thinking, so for you as a design guy, right? So if you suspect a PCB or a system that has ground issues, how do you troubleshoot? I mean, how do you convince your audience that it is caused by the ground, mainly the potential difference between the ground? How do you measure these grounds?
Well, of course, you break out the trusty oscilloscope. If you have a good enough scope, you can usually measure it just right there off of the pins. You of course need to know a little something about what you would expect to ensure that the scope is good enough. I forget which one of Eric Bogatin's rules of thumb that is. I think it's rule number 9. But know what to expect before you measure. So usually a decent order of magnitude as far as what the ground bounce might be, and you would be able to measure it. And I think just with doing some basic power on checks and then checks of functionality in the design, you get a sense for kind of order of magnitude, for example, what the oscillation with ground bounce is going to be. And so that informs which piece of equipment you're going to use to measure it. Because if you don't even have a good enough piece of equipment to measure it in the first place, then you'll never see it, but it could be there.
Yeah, that's right. I think you touched two important factors here, okay? So the first one is measuring instrument, okay? So we're talking about oscilloscope or possibly spectral analyzer. But another one, as you said, is you have to know your circuit. So in today's discussion, I would like to share my experience of measuring ground by using both the voltage measurements and current measurements. And I wanted to share, I think, 4 or 5 techniques. And I wanted to discuss with you with the pros and cons of each method.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting because I think for most folks, they break out their probe, and the probe is basically a voltage probe, right? Or it's like a differential probe. So it's just measuring a voltage, but not a current method. So this is going to be a new one for me.
Okay, right. Okay, so without further ado, can I share my screen?
Yes, please do.
First slide, we're talking about measuring ground bounce, okay? So you can see from this photo, which I took for this talk show, there's a evaluation board, okay? And this board is a isolated flyback converter, okay? Quite common. So the transformer basically forms the isolation barrier between one ground and the other ground. So in this case, it is in fact a separate ground. So for this one, if we want to measure the ground bounce or the ground difference between the two grounds, can we use a method showing on this screen? So basically, for those people who are listening to this podcast, we're talking about a 10-to-1 passive probe with about 3-inch long ground leads, okay? So the ground leads is connected to one ground and the probe tip is connected to the other ground. Most of the people who listen to your podcast, they have good experience, then they will probably say, no, we can't use this method. And the main reason that we cannot really use this method to accurately measure the ground bounce is that two main issues. One is the probe tip, although it is high impedance on the data sheet, but when you get to higher frequency, so often we're talking about hundreds of megahertz, then the parasitic capacitance of the tip itself becomes a low impedance path for the noise you try to measure. So as a result, we have what we call loading condition here. So that means the circuit you are trying to measure all of a sudden is affected by the measurement itself. So that's the first issue, which is loading. And the second issue is that this long lead of the ground lead, together with the probe tip, they form a loop. And you can see from this picture that the loop size is not small. So given this loop size, this loop itself can potentially pick up the noise on the PCB. Therefore, this is something we call near field coupling. So the noise gets into your measurements. So really you wanted to measure the voltage difference between the two grounds, but actually you cannot really trust the results by simply applying this method.
Yes, 100% agree. Usually you'll break out like one of the like little active probes. Like I have a tech active probe for my tech scope, yeah. And it's got the, you know, the two pogo pins. Or you'll take that probe that you show on the image and then break it apart and put the little, you know, the spring tip on it in the end. So that way you get that really tiny loop.
Yes, I guess this is what you describe, isn't it? So often, I guess guys like you would be very familiar using active FET probe. And this is exactly one from Tektronix, as you said. So just from the data sheet, we can see it works up to about 4 gigahertz. And because, you know, the loading we talked about is primarily dependent on the parasitic capacitance of the probe tip. So tech would sort of design the tip so that it can have very, very low input capacitance. So we're talking about less than 1 picofarad level. But still, this probe, I mean, it works definitely on the PCB board. But if you ask me the drawback of this method, I would say, first, you can see from the data sheet that it only works to about 8 volts, positive and negative. So if the noise somehow is larger than 8 volts, then potentially you could damage the probe. And we know that how expensive these probes are. So definitely we wouldn't try to use this to measure a high frequency, big noise circuit. And another issue is this works fine on a PCB, but if you want to measure the ground difference between one PCB, let's say, and to your chassis, then perhaps it's too far away where you cannot really use this probe effectively. And the third thing is if you somehow damaged the probe, it takes a long lead time and also lots of money to repair this kind of probe.
Expensive to repair, but also expensive to replace if you have to replace them. And I've, you know, looked around at prices for multi-gigahertz probes, and obviously the higher frequency you go, the more and more expensive they get.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. You're right. Yeah. So they are expensive to repair and expensive to replace. Good. So we're on the same page. So that's why if we look at, if you, as I mentioned, if you want to measure for high power, like power electronics application, okay? So it could be a off-the-line switchable power supply where you have high voltage on the primary side and low voltage on the secondary side, and you want to measure the ground difference between the two sides of the transformer, you wouldn't use that FET probe. So as an alternative, there's a company called Onfilter. I believe it's an American company. And they have a product called MSN series. Okay, so here I show you a photo of what it looks like.
Anybody that's listening on audio, make sure to head over to YouTube and you'll be able to see all of this stuff that we're talking about, especially these boards and filters and probes.
So yes, this from a company called Onfilter, right? And this kit is designed specifically for power applications. And you can see it has two tips, pretty much like your differential probe tips, right? And then they have the main body, and basically the main body does all the clever bits. And the reason I wanted to show this device is that it's really designed for power application, as I said, and the voltage level can be hundreds of volts, okay? So it's perfect for things like a transient event. So imagine you work in a sort of noisy industrial environment, and there could be relays switching on and off, and the kickback voltage generated between the lines could easily reach hundreds of volts at high frequency. Okay, so here we're talking about hundreds of megahertz bandwidth. So this device gives you the freedom of measuring these high voltage, high frequency transient events. Okay, And as I said, it's ideal for this kind of application. So the bandwidth we're talking about starts from 30K and stop at about 200 megahertz. That's this device. So yeah, it's pretty good. And I often use it quite often to troubleshoot the ground issue between a chassis and a PCB 0 volts, let's say.
So here on screen, you write, the test lead could potentially couple ambient noise.
Yes.
And this type of measurement how do you deal with that? Or do we not worry about it if we're expecting to measure, let's say, I don't know, let's say a 50 volt transient, some huge number, right, compared to whatever the background noise is?
That's correct. So if it's a transient voltage, as you said, then you don't need to worry too much about the leads coupling the noise. But if you wanted to measure the conducted RF noise, then you do need to worry that's this massive loop, because the two leads, positive and negative, they could have about, I think in this case, half a meter length. So the whole loop could have about 1 meter length. So yeah, they will couple noise. So in that case, that's why if I could, I would try to minimize the loop size by twisting these two leads or keep the two leads close together. And another thing is this device works with a coaxial cable to the 50 ohm impedance of a oscilloscope or spectral analyzer. So I often put some ferrite cores on that coaxial cable and also on these two leads as a common mode suppression. So whatever I measured is the coupling, the noise coupling to the system is minimized. That's all how I often deal with this.
Yeah, those are good tips. So with the noise suppression, or the common mode noise suppression, the goal is to ensure that you're actually only measuring that differential voltage that you intend to measure directly from the board.
That's correct. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, so this is another voltage measurement. It has its pros and cons. And here I show you some obsolete but great products. Okay, I actually don't know the reason why manufacturers stopped manufacturing these really, really good kits, but I believe the market is definitely behind this, because if you look at it, really for people who are really interested in measuring the ground bounds, a specialist like us. And it's a very small market. Therefore, I think though these products are really good, they now disappeared from the market. So the first one on the screen is a passive differential probe, okay, from Fisher FCC. And this one has a bandwidth from 900 kilohertz, let's call it 1 megahertz, all the way up to 1.8 gigahertz. So that's a really, really wide bandwidth. And their impedance curve from the data sheet is really flat in this frequency range. So it's ideal for measuring transients such as ESD, lightning, or EMP simulation, kind of this kind of application. And on this diagram, as you can, on this photo you see, this is from Doug Smith's website. He was using this small tip to measure the ground bounds between two, let's say in a big cabinet. You can use this to measure the ground bounds between two side walls, for example, because it depends on how you mechanically connect the two side walls of a cabinet. Sometimes if you don't do it in a good way, you could introduce huge voltage difference between two ground potentials. So you can see, yeah, this is a really good kit for measuring such noises, but it's unfortunately that I don't think Fisher produces this kit anymore.
That's unfortunate. People will have to go over to eBay to try and find one.
Yes, indeed. And okay, so obviously this one from Fisher would cost quite a bit, because Fisher is often considered one of the high-end products. But I wanted to point out our readers or our listeners that if you go to Henry Oates' famous book, The Electric Magnetic Compatibility Engineering, if you go to figure, in this case, 18-8 and 18-9, you will find he introduced a low-cost homemade passive probes. If you look at how it works, it works very similar to the Fisher one. So I believe, the Fisher one probably is based on a very similar or probably the same principle. So in case you're a hands-on person like us, you wanted to make a low-cost passive probe that works up to a gigahertz range, feel free to give a try. And so here I basically present this reference here.
Mm. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen those figures.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, you can see. So these three are the voltage measurements between, well, three voltage measurements that we could apply measuring ground voltage, let's say. So next, let's have a look at the current measurement. Okay, so the first slide you see here is a current measurement, is a contact current measurement technique. Okay, and these two photos, although it looks very differently, but actually they work on the same principle. Okay, I just quickly explain it. The first one that you can actually use this to measure on a PCB board is particularly useful if you design a system where you need to connect a few PCBs, right? And of course, each PCB will have its own ground points on the connector. And if you just wanted to find out how noisy this ground pin is, you can apply this method. The method works in a way when you basically attach a wire, let's say this wire is 20, 30 centimeters long, and you attach this wire to the ground pin, what happens is you basically formed a quarter wavelength antenna because you have one end sort of low impedance and the other end is high impedance. Therefore, it's a quarter wavelength antenna. So if you have noise on this ground pin, common mode current will flow on this wire you attached. And then you use a magnetic field coupling method. Okay, so in the first picture, it's a square loop, right? A magnetic field loop. And basically, you use a paper tape to tape one side of the square loop to this wire. So you basically achieve a magnetic field coupling. Therefore, you can measure the current flowing on this wire, and then you can sort of predict whether there's enough or too much ground noise on this ground pin. Okay, so that's one method on a PCB level. But the same principle applies if you work in a big system. Okay, and again, we're using the cabinet as example. So in the big cabinet, you have many systems, could be variable speed drives and things like that. And if you suspect the chassis is very noisy, what you can do is you get a 1 meter long wire, you basically attach that wire to the ground, in this case chassis, you want to measure, and then you put an RF current probe on this wire and measure the RF current. And it's again the same principle. The wire acts as a quarter wavelength antenna. It will have common mode currents going through it, and you are using magnetic field coupling methods to measure the common mode current.
Yeah, I see here. Okay, so this is going to, well, because you're using a 30 centimeter brass wire, you're really going to capture the lower end of the frequency range for any noise that's present on that ground pin. Because I guess technically that noise could really be broadband, right? Could be very low frequency, could be very high frequency, but you're at least going to capture, down to some lower level and all frequencies above that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah. So the 30 centimeter long would measure frequency up to, let's say, a few hundred megahertz. If you shorten that, you can measure higher frequency contents. But I wouldn't say this method would measure very well up to a gigahertz. It's probably impossible. So I would say, yeah, frequency bandwidth wise, it's very effective up to a few hundred
And then
megahertz. Yeah.
that very high frequency issue, that's both due to the coupling efficiency into the square loop, as well as I would say, I guess an input impedance match even into just the wire itself.
Yes, two reasons, as exactly as you said. And also, as I highlighted, another drawback is the since the antenna, this in this case, the 30 centimeter brass wire is an antenna. If you use this on one PCB, it's all right. But if you use this method in a noisy environment, there could be many other PCBs nearby, then this antenna pick up noise from, all the other PCBs. So you're not really measuring your ground noise. So that's another drawback of this
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes
technique.
sense. So probably not the best selection if you have a multi-board system and you're just concerned about one of the boards in the system.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so another method is to use a resistive current probe. Okay, so this is called current probe, but it's use a resistive network and it's extremely simple to build. So you can see here I have a homemade resistive probe. Again, I give you the reference. I've seen this method in Doc Smith's website, because he is a master in high frequency measurement. So he often has this kind of low cost homemade solutions that you can try. And this method works again up to a few hundred megahertz. So for listeners and for viewers who are interested in having a go on building one of these, feel free to check his article. As you can see in this photo, I was using this to troubleshoot a noisy ground. This ground is actually an electric vehicle, is a big truck, okay? And when I was troubleshooting the vehicle, I suspected that the chassis itself becomes very noisy during the onboard charging. So the onboard charger is being charged, and all of a sudden we've seen noise. So I suspect the chassis actually has been polluted during the charging. So you can see from this picture, I have this resistive current probe, and my probe tip is just touching this bracket, which represents the chassis. And here you can see I was using a spectral analyzer, okay, so 50 ohm input impedance, and you can compare the noise profile when the onboard charger was switched off and when the onboard charger was switched on. So you can see it works down to very low frequency. So in this case, I start from 9 kilohertz. Yeah, so it works pretty well from very low frequency to about 100 megahertz.
And that's actually you in the picture.
That's me in the picture. Yes, yeah. I asked the test engineers to take a photo. So, but yeah. As I said, this method works and particularly useful for people who are hands-on engineers who wanted to build things themselves. Definitely feel free to check. Okay, so that's the resistive current probe method. Again, so in this case, we measure the ground directly.
You said it could load the circuit. I'm going to assume this is due to the selection of the appropriate resistor value.
Obviously, with measuring high impedance circuits, you really want to have a high impedance network in your probe. But as we mentioned, high impedance is often difficult to achieve due to many reasons. Well, one of the main reasons is parasitic capacitance that basically become low impedance when the frequency goes above hundreds of megahertz. So if you read through Doc Smith's notes on how to construct this tip, you can already see from this picture as well that, for example, we use five resistors in parallel, right? We can easily use one resistor, but why do we need five resistors in parallel? Well, simply to minimize the parasitics impact I mentioned. It's if you look at the resistance value, actually they are not really high, high impedance compared with thousands of ohms. They're not thousands of ohms, but still in the frequency range of interest, hundreds of ohms could still be high impedance. That's the beauty of high frequency measurement.
Yeah, and what you're showing here with this homemade resistive probe, if people aren't familiar with this image, what you're showing here is, or you can kind of see here, is that you have through-hole resistors, or you have axial resistors, right? So it makes perfect sense that you have to parallel out five of them because those leads contain a lot of inductance.
Yes, indeed, indeed. So, as we all know, when you're dealing with RF or high frequency signals, your biggest enemy is the parasitics, whether they are parasitic inductance or parasitic capacitance. Well, they are our enemies. Could be enemies, could be friends. Depends on how we use it. The last method showing here is perhaps a really good balance, I would say, because this method, if you have a look at this picture I show you, it's called use RF surface current probe. Okay, so it's different with your normal RF monitor probe, which is often a hinged donut shape design. This one is really half donut shape. Okay. And the idea is the same, right? So if you have currents flowing on a surface, so this surface could be ground plane on a PCB, or could be chassis in a system, or could be anything in a large installation. So when you place this half donut shape current probe against this metal structure, because of the fact that radio frequency signals travel only on the surface, right? We have the skin depth issue. And this probe will pick up this current. And because these are still, well-built radio frequency monitor probe, they give you a manufacturer will give you a data sheet where you can use the data sheet, basically the transfer impedance of the probe, to calculate the current very accurately. So in terms of accuracy, this is a lot better compared with the slides we showed before. And you can look, compare with my finger, this size is also quite small. So you can use it on a PCB, but of course you can't really use it on a very tiny PCB. But giving a reasonably PCB size, you could potentially use this to measure on a PCB level as well. And yeah, I think, and also another benefit of this is it does not have any contact with the ground points you want to measure, right? Because everything is magnetic field coupled. So you avoid the loading as much as you could. Well, I mean, some people say, well, this basically avoids the loading we discussed. But I would say be careful about that, because it depends on the circuit you work on. Because in a very recent case, right, when I was troubleshooting a board, I noticed that even when my hands was moving around the PCB, because of the parasitic capacitance between my hand and the PCB, I changed the circuit operation. So, for some circuits, even the parasitic capacitance of my human body can affect its operation. So I wouldn't say this would eliminate the loading completely, but at least it minimized the loading as much as you could. Mm.
So here you list that these types of probes, these RF surface current probes, they can be very accurate across a wide frequency range. How high can you go?
I guess this, I'm not sure. I think hundreds of megahertz is achievable. Not sure if they can get to the gigahertz range, but I need to check with different manufacturers. But hundreds of megahertz is very achievable.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. So yeah, you could really get you could really have the ability to characterize a pretty large number of issues in an RF system, aside from just leakage of, let's say, from the antenna directly onto the chassis. Okay.
Indeed.
And then for high power applications, same kind of questions. How high can you go?
Oh, yeah. You actually raise a very good point, because I haven't mentioned that. Right. For me, most of the jobs, at least in the past 2 years, are to do with very high power applications. So we're talking about 500 kVA or 1 meg kVA, okay? So these systems are often designed for example, charging an electric plane, electric vehicle, mining equipment, all this new renewable energy application, right? So the power level is extremely high. And one of the issues with this high power application is because, in the past, if you look at many other materials provided by other EMC experts, they often say, for power applications, if you look at the low frequency range, we're talking about hundreds of kilohertz up to a few megahertz. Well, yeah, you get lots of differential mode noise. Okay. And then moving from a few megahertz all the way up to hundreds of megahertz, this is your common mode area. But the problem or the challenge with this new high power application is that because of the power level, okay, they all need proper thermal, heat sink and things like that. So as a result, when they switch, it's high voltage and you got huge area surface place, right? Surface area, that is the heat sink. So what happens is, even down to the kilohertz range, so very low frequency range, we start to see common mode current. A large amount of common mode current all of a sudden appear in the sort of kilos or maybe 10 kilohertz range. And this is very new. That's the EMC engineer's phase. Okay. So I had lots of experience dealing with that kind of issue. And yeah, you just raised this good point. So that's why, I bring up this subject, how to measure the ground noise.
So that's interesting that you're getting that common mode noise all the way down to those lower frequencies, because a lot of these systems, they're switching faster, and so the you would expect if it's anywhere in any way related to switching noise, it's actually going to push out any of those effects that induce common mode noise out to higher frequencies, not to lower frequencies. But it sounds like it's really the physical size of the system that allows the coupling at lower frequencies to be more efficient and then more noticeable.
Definitely, definitely. You're right, absolutely right. The physical size of the system, because we all know that parasitic capacitance is the main reason why we're seeing this common mode current. And for this kind of application, if you look at the silicon carbide or IGBT, they are very big, right? Physical size very big, and they, as I mentioned, they all mounted on this big area of heat sink, and in between is just the thermal paste. So then you if you calculate the parasitic capacitance, you'll be very, very surprised to see how large this capacitance is.
If you're looking for a probe that has to handle these types of power systems, are the current probes that are out there on the market capable of doing it? Or do you have to get something custom built? Or, what do you do?
So that's if you look at these slides here, we're talking about surface current probe and also the resistor current probe. I believe they can all work in the application we just mentioned, because these are not as delicate as your expensive FET, active FET probes. You can either buy an off-the-shelf one, or you make something by yourself. And this works from very low frequency up to a few hundred megahertz, so probably just enough to cover the whole frequency range. And also you can measure if you can measure transient noise up to tens or hundreds of or hundreds of volts, then you don't need to worry that this probe will being blow up during your troubleshooting. So yeah, definitely I would that's why I recommend all these probes. One thing I should just mention before I forget is that if you look at this resistor current probes, as the tip, I always have a safety capacitor as well, because in theory, this probe, if you just use it to measure ground, you should be safe, but you never know. Safety is always the first thing when you troubleshoot a high voltage system. So I would definitely apply this safety hundreds of volts rated capacitor just for the safety concern.
This is all extremely informative, and we've talked about all this stuff for I think what 45 minutes or so about now. So this is all the type of stuff that I think I've been trying to get a bit deeper on in terms of the actual test and measurement for EMC. So thank you very much for presenting all of this.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and it's always a pleasure to chat with you, Zach, because we all learn from each other as we do.
Yeah, I always say around here, you can never stop learning. So who are some of the folks that people can expect to see in the conference coming up in May? Obviously yourself, I'm sure.
yes. So we have Mr. Kenneth Wyatt. You probably know Ken yourself. He's traveling from the United States and join us, and he will present his troubleshooting techniques on both days in the afternoon session. So I have the pleasure of presenting the material together with him. So that's very exciting. And we have Mr. Keith Armstrong and his associates. And we have James Pawson, who is my colleague in the UK. He's very active in the EMC Society. And we have many other speakers from industries. And, as I said, we are sort of unfortunate to have wars in Europe, right? So, but it does highlight the importance of, defense and military. So this year we also have many speakers from the defense industry talking about, you know, the solutions or the techniques they often use in the military domain, let's say. So yeah, I would say if you look at the industrial sectors, we cover everything from military defense to automotive design and simulation. So yeah, I cannot wait.
Well, as I said at the top of the podcast, I encourage anybody who is in the UK to make your way over to Newbury on May 22nd and 23rd for EMC and Compliance International Conference. If you want more information, make sure to check out the show notes and we will have some information there. You can also contact Min directly on LinkedIn. Okay, that's great. Once again, we have been talking with Min Zhang, founder of Mach 1 Design and our local master of EMC troubleshooting. We're very happy to have him back. As I mentioned, make sure to make your way over to EMC and Compliance International. If you are watching on YouTube, make sure to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. You'll be able to keep up with all of our podcast episodes and tutorials as they come out. And last but not least, don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.